And now a follow-up to a story that we have been watching. Last month, we talked about a runoff in the election of Houston's next mayor. Anise Parker beat fellow Democrat and former city attorney Gene Locke. Yesterday, Anise Parker made history when she spoke these words.
I, Anise Parker,
do solemnly swear,
do solemnly swear,
that I will faithfully execute,
that I will faithfully execute,
the duties of the office,
the duties of the office,
of mayor of the city of Houston,
of mayor of the city of Houston,
of the state of Texas,
of the state of Texas,
and will to the best.
Now, officially the mayor of Houston, Anise Parker becomes the first openly gay mayor of a major U.S. city. Parker took a moment during the public ceremony to address her gay and lesbian supporters.
I understand how much this day means to you. I can feel your excitement and your joy, but I can also feel your apprehension and your longing for acceptance. I will gladly carry you forward, but today is simply one step toward a tomorrow of greater justice. And when the time comes, I will gladly pass the torch to the next in waiting, and I will cheer for them as you do for me.
That was the newly sworn in mayor of Houston, Texas, Anise Parker. She was speaking yesterday at her public swearing in. We turn now to our weekly Money Coach conversation. Detroit, of course, is not alone in its housing crisis. According to Moody'sEconomy.com, more than 2 million people lost their homes last year. These losses were a mix of foreclosures, forced sales for less than the value of the mortgage, or people who simply handed over their house deeds to their lenders because they couldn't afford to make payments. Foreclosure numbers are expected to rise again this year. And the federal government has rolled out several programs to help distressed homeowners. But some critics are now saying these programs may be doing more harm than good by temporarily keeping people in their homes who simply cannot afford them. Peter Goodman, the national economics correspondent for the New York Times, recently wrote about this. He's with us now, along with Alvin Hall, our regular contributor on matters of personal finance and the economy. I welcome you both, and Happy New Year to you both.
Happy New Year to you. Thanks for having me.
Happy New Year, Michelle.
Peter, we'll start with you. The Obama administration created the Making Home Affordable program to try to slow the pace of foreclosures. You wrote about this over the weekend. And you say that now there are those who are criticizing it, saying that it's just delaying the inevitable. Tell us a little bit more about why some of these critics are saying that.
Well, we've seen a lot of loan modifications, lowered payments given to homeowners who are having trouble making payments. But almost all of these are on a trial basis where the homeowner is supposed to make 3 months' worth of payments and then send in some paperwork to validate their income. And then they're supposed to get what's called a permanent loan modification. Problem is, we've had something like 750,000 trial loan modifications and only about 31,000 permanent loan modifications. And the argument is that we're hearing increasingly from real estate experts, the banks just really don't want to hand out permanent loan modifications. They don't want to take the loss. They're hoping property values will come back. So as a result, people who really can't afford to make their payments are sending in these trial payments when they could be just saving that money and preparing to move on with their lives into rented places. The Treasury seems to have come around quietly to this view because this program began with taxpayer finance subsidies paid to mortgage companies that agree to modify loans. Now they're making these same payments to banks that agree to do short sales, where a homeowner sells their house for less than they owe the bank. And, you know, a lot of experts think that's a reasonable way to go because it's a way of clearing out all of this distressed inventory that's clogging real estate markets, but that does not keep somebody in their home.
Well, I want to hear more about this whole idea of what you call this wrenching but inevitable cleansing process that some of these critics say is necessary. But Alvin, before we go to Peter again, I want to hear from you on this. What is your view of this? I mean, Peter's making two points. One is that a lot of these homeowners just can't afford the homes and they need to be out of those homes. And secondly, the banks are not modifying the mortgages in the way that was expected. What do you think about that?
I think both points are quite valid. I think there are a lot of individuals who bought houses that were way beyond their means, and as their incomes have become flat or gone down due to the recession, they can't afford the houses. But I also think that we need to look at the servicers of these loans. Increasingly, over the last decade, all of these banks and servicing institutions feel they have an entitlement to make a profit, no matter whose money it is. If you look at what's happening with the credit cards now that the law is about to change, they've modified those so that the profit it's still built into that. I think they're having a hard time looking at these loans and making adjustments for individuals because all they see is profit coming out of their pockets.
Peter, I take the point that you in the piece where you interviewed a number of people who say that one or the other thing has to happen. Either people who can't afford them need to get out of these homes, or Treasury needs to use whatever mechanisms it has available to force the banks to make permanent modifications. They don't seem to be doing that. But I do want to ask about this whole wrenching but cleansing process. What's wrong with slowing the pipeline in the sense? It's very traumatic to lose a home.
Well,
and it
okay,
doesn't seem
all,
to be.
I want to back up for a second.
Sure.
I am certainly not taking the position that, you know, mm-hmm. we should just kick people out of their homes. I'm looking at this program that the Obama administration has given us, and 9-10 months into it, saying, well, what's the effect of it? And if you compare this program to the alternative, which is people unfortunately walking away from their homes and at least saving money that they're now sending to mortgage companies in the often futile attempt to save their homes, well, you know, compared to that, it might be better for them to just keep their money and move on.
Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying, and I understand that you're not advocating any particular perspective here, but I do want to ask about the alternate view of delaying the inevitable is inherently harmful.
There is that view that we've got a system that's clogged with homes that were purchased at prices that are just simply too high for just about anybody to afford. And we've got to stop simply slowing the foreclosure pipeline, knowing that it's going to pick up again, because until housing prices fall further and until banks actually reckon with the bad loans on their books, we're going to have this market that's just kind of temporarily dammed up. Well, let's just let that happen. Let's give aid to people who are going to lose their homes. Let's have our government supports for people who can actually afford to stay in their homes. But let's let the market do what it's supposed to do and clear away the wreckage. Now, that's a controversial position. I mean, not everybody believes that, but that argument is gaining some traction.
What are some
Michelle,
of it? Go ahead, Alva.
Mm-hmm. My problem with that point of view is that it assumes that the recovery will be a V-shaped recovery. We'll hit a point on the downside and then it'll start back up. That's not what's going to happen at all. This is going to be like a prolonged tsunami. It's going to hit one wave and then it's going to knock all that housing out, and then there'll be another wave as people just stand there and wait to be hit by the financial crisis. This country is not going to provide these people with any support. This government is not going to step in and help these people. It's going to say, let the free market rule. It's your problem. That's what's going to happen. The trickle is better because at least it gives people time to plan.
Peter, in your piece, you quote the chief economist at Moody's Economy, where he suggests that there isn't any way for Treasury to tweak the plan or to cajole or pressure or entice servicers to do more to address the crisis. Do you think that that's true? I mean, Mazzanti suggests that the administration needs a new initiative to address the question of the 15 million homeowners who are underwater, meaning that they owe the bank more than their home is worth. First, do you think that that's true? Is there nothing the Treasury can do to force more permanent modifications? And secondly, are there any other new initiatives being discussed?
Well, we're sort of compressing a few points, but first of all, Mark Zandi agrees with Alvin's point, which is that you can't just simply sort of, you know, let the forest burn down and hope that that clears away the undergrowth and we get something healthier, that ultimately that's too dangerous and you'd end up burning down cities if you do that. So what Zandi's arguing is that we need a whole new program that does involve writing down principles. I do think part of the problem with this Treasury plan is that there's no distinction made between the servicers, which is to say the company that sends you a bill every month and collects the money, and the actual holder of your mortgage, which is, you know, more than likely an investor. And the servicers, and these are parts of major banks like J.P. Morgan Chase and Bank of America, these companies stand to profit from long-term delinquency. They collect additional fees from investors. They're able to order increased assessments, insurance policies at the end of the deal when the house is eventually foreclosed on. So a servicer can stand to benefit from having you behind on your payments for many months and eventually foreclose. It's the investor who gets hit when your house gets sold for a lot less than it could have fetched, you know, a year ago. Mm-hmm. And that's something that the Treasury program has never really acknowledged.
Hmm. Alvin, final thought from you. What else do you think that the administration should be thinking about? And what should homeowners who find themselves in this situation be thinking about? Those are two very different points, but if you would try.
I think what the Treasury needs to look at is another component of the program, which is extending the mortgages, making them up to 40 years, instead of just looking at reducing the payments or lowering the interest rates. If they made the mortgages longer, it would reduce the payments for a longer period of time, enabling people to ride out this storm and perhaps watch the value of their houses go up. I think that would be important. For an investor facing this problem, I think you have to look at the reality of the situation. You have to ask yourself, am I going to be able to afford this house if the modification is not made permanent after 90 days? Look at this hardcore. Do not fool yourself. And if you think you're not going to be able to make those payments, even with a permanent modification, your best bet is to walk away from the house.
Alvin Hollis, Tell Me More's regular contributor on matters of personal finance. He joined us from our bureau in New York. Peter Goodman is national economic correspondent for the New York Times. He's the author of Past Due, The End of Easy Money and the Renewal of the American Economy. And he joined us from his home office in New York. I thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.